One event and day of my career that has been filled with Forrest Gump-esque memories of the crazy box of chocolates that is red carpet reporting, entertainment journalism, in and out of Hollywood, what have you, is the day that I covered and was at the Grammy Awards the morning Kobe Bryant died. I will never forget it. Again, it's one of those things that is just a really crazy turn of events that almost feels written that you can't make up, right? Kobe Bryant tragically passes away in a helicopter crash mere hours before the Grammys that are taking place at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, where Kobe Bryant, arguably one of the best NBA basketball players of all time, made his career and his legacy. And I will never forget it. Just the image of, first of all, being there and that pure shock, but walking into the Staples Center before or after the carpet before the awards, and they clear out the whole downtown area of LA, which is no easy feat, if you know, especially I can't even imagine these days, like tents abound. But just seeing his face on all those huge screens and the dates of his lifespan. Again, knowing that I'm at the very place and the center of where that legacy was created. And then it got even crazier, right? Being backstage, because I wasn't actually in the audience of the Grammys that year. I had the pleasure of being backstage where all the artists go after they win and do a little like baby press conference, whatever, which in and of itself felt so weird that day because it just felt so ick to pull a Gen Z and tone deaf to be like, okay, we're here like wiping each other's assholes with accolades when like this tragic thing just happened, like in this very house, basically. Remind me to tell you my Dua Lipa story at another later point in time. But walking backstage again in that arena and everywhere I look are photos of Kobe Bryant. And it just was so surreal and trippy. And again, something that I just will never forget again, being there basically at that moment on that day and like right where, you know, the tragedy unfolded. Super, super trippy. But further, you know, award season is upon us yet again, right? And we just had the Grammys, which I'm going to be talking about today. And really thinking about this and reflecting on this, what I remember from that day, yes, was it again a crazy turn of events that almost you have to like you can't even write it. It's that heartbreaking and sad. Yes, so we'll always remember that, right? Whether it be, you know, sports, pop culture, history, that just really stands out as one of those really crazy events that you can't even make up. But further, when I think about that day, I couldn't name for you one person who won a Grammy. Like, I could give two fucks about who won a Grammy that day. If I'm reflecting back and I was there, I'm thinking about, you know, the legacy of Kobe Bryant, right? And it got me thinking about all of this, like our obsession with accolades and validations and awards and trophies versus real impact and legacy and what that means. So we just had the Grammys and I felt like it, yes, like what we're all ADD, so it may be old news now collecting cobwebs in your news cycle and in your feed, but have no fear because it captured so much about this generation, the generation that is here and it's clear, okay? When it comes to self-importance and narcissism and entitlement and hypocrisy around all of this. So, first things first, before we get into all this, and don't worry, okay? Because I'm picking up my Barbie Malibu phone and I'm calling the Oscars with Greta Gerwig and Margot and all of those, you know, all that controversy too. It's coming. So, first things first is I want to address, just as a little sidebar, my thoughts on the messaging that happened at the Grammys this year as it pertains to the war in the Middle East. Now, on the surface of it, you could think this is a bunch of like virtue signaling one way or the other. Like, you know, again, we've talked about it even on this show, like, where's the line of having a message and a statement and also just letting art be art and entertain us. And I will say with this, right, whether I agree or disagree, I do feel like that is a power of music, is to communicate and affect the masses in a significant way. So you had Annie Lennox, and there's always going to be one, right? Especially these days, like, there is always going to be that one that needs to, like, make some kind of statement. Like, now it just goes without saying. But we had Annie Lennox, who was doing a tribute to Sinead O'Connor, singing her cover of Nothing Compares to You. And in it, she raises her fist and says, you know, artists for ceasefire, right? Pertaining to Israel and Palestine. And while I, you know, obviously disagree and think that it's idiotic, I wasn't totally like, oh, here we go. I was a little bit like, you know what? Again, I'm a free speech advocate. You're an artist. You're going to do what you do. Like, fine. Again, even if I don't agree. And then on the other end of it, you had Harvey Mason Jr., who is the CEO of the Recording Academy, who I thought actually gave a really beautiful tribute and moment. And he gave a little speech and introduced a small orchestra comprised of Israelis, Palestinians, and Arabs, and basically saying, like, this is what we, not only as the music community, but, you know, globally, like, what harmony really looks like. And it was a really beautiful moment. And I saw a lot of influential people in music, you know, like Scooter Braun being like, wow, really hats off, because, again, in a crazy twist of events, somehow, you know, condemning Holocaust 2.0 is controversial in the streets of Hollywood. So we haven't seen really much of this. So to see this, but in, again, a really kind of beautiful universal way, I thought was really nice. So, and again, it's like, that's what it does. And that is the power of music, right? I mean, look, you have John Lennon, who, you know, member of the Beatles. Imagine all the people. And John Lennon was assassinated. Why? Because of some unhinged, you know, super fan who felt like the Beatles were becoming more powerful than Jesus. And as we know, like, you know, we can't be coming after, you know, the man upstairs like that. Like, it's just not gonna fly. But no, regardless, that is the power of music, right? And that it has. So now to get into some of the fun of it. So that's that on that. It's just, you know, addressing that kind of elephant in the room and where I stand with that. Now to get into the fun of, like, just how up everyone's own assholes they are, and, like, the entitlement and the generation ripe with narcissism, right? So first there are, like, a couple fun examples that also were super eye roll, but it's like, I'm not going to give it that much attention. But one that caught my eye is Miley Cyrus at the Grammys this year is performing her song Flowers. And she goes into the first chorus and she's like mad at the audience. She starts singing and she's like, why are you guys acting like you don't know this song? It's like, I'm sorry. Do you expect us to recite your song like it's the national anthem every day? Like, lady, what do you want from us? Like, personally, I think it's a totally mediocre song. I don't know if it's overplayed. I don't know if it's just not my jive. It's not personally what makes me twist and shout. Like, fine. But I was just like, oh my God, like, I'm sorry. And it's just, again, right? So telling of our generation. Like, how could you not know my song? How could you not like my photo? How could you not keep a tally of every breath I've ever taken in this life? It's like, Jesus, like, take a seat. The other that caused, wow, my dry state is coming out, that caused over my coffee quite a stir was Who Am I? Also, did you guys, total sidebar, but the fact that mob wife aesthetic is coming back and mob wives are coming out of the woodwork now saying that it's appropriation, like, plot fucking twist. So now that Native Americans are having their time, which I'm getting to, we moved on from them and now we're going, going to the mob wife. So anyway, the moment when Taylor Swift won her award, and the kosher thing to do is to Celine Dion, right? Absolute icon in music, presents Taylor Swift the award. I think it was huge, like album of the year or something. And Taylor Swift, as per usual, just doing like a ring around the rosy circle on the stage with her friends and making friendship bracelets. And like Celine Dion is shook and like does not know what to do. Like her late husband returns from the grave and even like tries to help her like come alive, because like Celine Dion is just like, what is the reason and what is happening? But it was really controversial because Taylor Swift, like a bulldozer, like beelines and like snatches the award from Celine and doesn't like hug and kiss and thank her, which is, you know, what you're really supposed to do. So people are saying it was like totally classless and again, narcissistic. I Taylor Swift has been around the block. The bitch knows how this goes. So to say she was just so swept up in excitement, like it is winning prom queen, you know, after you had your She's All That makeover. And it's like, oh my God, I never expected this moment. It's like, no, Taylor Swift knows what to do. And it is rude. And it does look classless. It's like, how are you going to do Celine like that? Absolutely not. Like, it's just courtesy. It's just cordial. Like, I don't know what she was thinking with that. But anywho, this brings me now to, so those are just, again, fun how everyone's just like obsessed with their own selves and nothing else in this life matters. I actually saw a very funny meme video the other day, real, about a potential World War III. And it was really funny because it's like, who is going to be involved in this war to defend the United States when we can't even bring ourselves, like we are so entitled and lazy that we can't even bring ourselves to go bring our fat asses through the drive-thru at McDonald's, but we have to Uber Eats it to our house. And we are so absorbed in our selfies, like we can't even be bothered with defending the integrity of our country. Like, sorry, someone else do it. And I can't get my paid time off that day. Like, so true. But anyway, okay, so the Oscars. So before we get into more of what happened at the Grammys and the Jay-Z speech that really caught my attention, the Jay-Z of it all, was the whole uproar of the Oscar snubs, which was the sheer audacity of Ryan Gosling being nominated for Barbie and Greta Gerwig, the director, and Margot Robbie getting snubbed, right? And I saw so many memes that were like, oh, well, this is life imitating art. Like, a man, you know, finding his way in the patriarchy and the perks of that, basically, right? It's like, right, this whole female dominated world, yet the man comes on top, whatever. So that was not meant to be a sexual innuendo, okay? You dirty minds. Jesus. Jesus didn't hear that, don't worry. So anyway, Jesus knows not to listen to my show because he would be straight up shook, okay? Him and Celine Dion's husband up there, straight up shook by the unfolding of events down here. Cancel Me Baby. So there was a whole big uproar, right? It's like, how dare they, da da. And it's like, listen, you know, I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world, but I'm sorry, this award show, it's not the Barbie awards. Like, this award show is not solely revolved around Barbie. So when it comes to like, oh, they were getting snubbed, think about this, okay? Maybe the people voting didn't think that Margot Robbie was the best actress. Okay, it's not, think about this. It's not like they voted five dudes. If it was really that like male dominated and patriarchal, you would think they still voted for five women, just none were Margot Robbie. It's not like they came in here voting for, you know, Dylan Mulvaney and their friends or guys or Chris Pratt and Marvel's gang for that matter. They still voted for women, just Margot Robbie wasn't one of them. And in fact, this is where there is no pleasing the PC police, because what have you, but in the category of best lead actress this year, is Lily Gladstone, who makes history as the first Native American woman to be nominated for an Oscar as the best lead actress. Again, this is coming from Hollywood, where I had the tail end of it in 2020 of its heyday, but like even then, they don't like start any ceremony without acknowledging that they're on stolen land of Native Americans, okay? So you would think that they're doing like backflips right now, but no. Sorry to Lily, like, I guess your moment's come and gone, because we need to focus on how Margot Robbie wasn't nominated and Ryan Gosling was. It's like, get a grip on yourselves. And it's also worth noting, this is going to come around, but because this is another thing too. I'm thinking like, who even votes for these awards, right? And why do we care? But when it comes to the Oscars and the Academy, it's basically their peers, right? Fellow winners and actors and, you know, esteemed performers and what have you. So sorry, like maybe your peers just weren't peering with you that day. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And as far as Greta Gerwig, that's the other thing, right? It's like, do men and male directors just happen to get more attention and focus on them? Maybe, but it's also worth noting that there was a French woman director, obscure movie, sure, which we're also going to get to, which again, like, why do we care so much about this? Who was nominated and is a director in this category this year? But maybe they thought Greta just wasn't deserving. Okay. Like, that's what it is. Sorry. It's like, maybe you're just not the kid who got picked in dodgeball today. Like, what are you going to do about it? It just gets me thinking, like, again, what do you people want? Like, we're going to get to this, but again, right, when it comes to trophies versus impact, all anyone could talk about, everybody is still the living embodiment of Barbie all this time later. When I went to see it in the movies, I saw grown ass women, like half dead down to little toddlers dressed as Barbie. Like, that's the impact that it had, regardless of how I felt about the movie. The fact that it broke all of these box office records and like restored the US economy alongside Taylor Swift and Beyonce, which we're getting to, like, okay, so they weren't nominated. Who gives a fuck? Again, in a situation where you really can't isolate. It's hard to isolate, like, oh, it's male driven, when again, it's your peers voting for this and they did vote for other women, just not you. Sorry. So this gets me to now Jay-Z. Okay. The standout moment for me at the Grammys this past weekend, is when Jay-Z accepted the Dr. Dre Global Impact Award. Just think about that for a second. Like, Global Impact Award. Like, this isn't your high school spelling bee, right? This is a big deal. If you care what the Grammys and the Recording Academy thinks, which apparently Jay-Z really does, or don't you? Like, that's what I need to know. So what I mean by that is, he calls out the Grammys while accepting this big impact award, namely because they need to do better, or they need to do, as he says, close to getting it right. Right? Saying that Black artists aren't given the recognition or the accolades they deserve. Like, people like DMX, they could have X amount of number one albums, but they never won the album of the year for the Grammys. Now, when it comes to, this is where it's like, I poke holes in this, because really, it's like the Lily Gladstone thing, the Margot Robbie thing. Like, if you choose to, you could see anything through that lens, right? It's like statistics. Like, you can make statistics bend, twist, and bring it on however you like to fit what you want it to see. Now, is there merit in what he's saying? Maybe. But also, when you look at the broad scheme of things, it's kind of like, dude, what is the deal? Like, what are you really getting at? So he proceeds in his speech to call out the fact that Beyonce has won the most Grammys ever, yet the Recording Academy has the audacity to have never awarded her with Album of the Year. And it's a little bit like, dude, again, what do you want? It's giving participation trophy. It is giving participation trophy. Here's Beyonce, who made history last year in 2023 as the winningest Grammy artist of all time with 32 Grammy wins. But we're going to call out the very establishment awarding me right now for not giving her a single category award. Maybe they never thought that she had the best collective album of the year. So it's just really classless, and it's hypocritical. He goes as far as to say, like, throwing other people under the bus. He's like, some of you are going to get robbed, and some of you don't even like belong in these categories. Like, you have no place in these categories. It's like, dude, why do you have to go that hard when you and your wife collectively, again, are like the winningest Grammy artists of all time? Like, just what is the reason? But it's also bizarre to me, because why do you need validation and the stamp of approval from these people? Like, it just seems really hypocritical to me. If they're so white driven and they're so male driven and they're so narrow minded and archaic and old school, Why do you give a fuck what they think then? Like, why even accept the war? Why even show up? Like, you should be like, this doesn't even concern me. Like, what do, why do you want their approval if you can't stand them so much? And it goes for all of these things, right? Like, Oscar's so white and all these things. It's all, again, male driven or white driven. It's like, well, then what do you give a shit what they have to think if you don't align with what they align with, or you don't agree with them? Or again, you think that they're old farts. Why do you want their approval so badly? It seems hypocritical to me. And I'm going to give you people who walk the walk, but also, well, one person who's walked the walk, but further to me, again, what actually really matters. So funny enough, recently, Oscar nominee, who's an actress, Carey Mulligan, came out in vain of all this. This is all kind of like the perfect storm of all of this shit unraveling, where she admitted, when it comes to the Oscars now, that, you know, actors, she says, are 100% lying when they say that they don't care if they're nominated or not. And she's like, they absolutely do. It's so wicked because, you know, you're nominated by your peers and da 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 da. And the Recording Academy, by the way, is similar to, from my understanding, right? And I, truth be told, this is how much placement I give on awards. I didn't even know who comprised what voting committee until I Googled it 45 minutes ago, okay? And this is coming from someone who has been at all of these awards in the front row, at backstage, in the flesh, right? But this just goes to show, like, again, why do we care what this small pool of arguably pretentious and biased people think, right? With, like, their obscure opinions. But anyway, the Recording Academy is the same thing. It's vetted, you know, performers and instrumentalists and artists and what have you. So, and you know, it's all broken down by their own thing, right? The Golden Globes is the HFPA, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. But that's the other thing I think too with all this. It's like, even all of the, you know, microaggressions, quote, so to speak, aside, you do have the fact that this is a very small group of Hollywood media elitists who are not in touch with the common people. Like, could you imagine, even say politically, right? No matter how profound, no matter how impactful, no matter how many box office records broke or a movie, country music aside, these people over their dead bodies would ever vote or give attention to any like conservative work. So you have that in and of itself, right? Like the bias. So again, it's like, what do you give a shit what they think? But that's what's so wild to me is like, again, you have all of these people obsessed with it, but loathe it at the same time. It's almost like, you know, we talked about like the Regina George metaphor of our lives of Mean Girls coming back and a revival that's infiltrated our space that we did, our safe space here that we did not ask for. But it's almost like trying so hard to get the approval of the mean girl in high school to like your outfit. It's like, she's a bitch to you and puts your head in the toilet. So what do you give two shits what she thinks? So again, who's going to remember who the fuck won a Grammy in 2020 versus the legacy of Kobe Bryant, just in general, right? And it really got me thinking about impact and what matters. So even when you think about the Jay-Z example, right, with Beyonce, again, despite the fact that this woman who is Black has beat every single artist in history to have the most Grammy wins ever, but wow, you guys really fucked up and you got to get it right because she never won this single category. Like, how dare you, the true nerve. But the impact, right? Even this year, she went on the Renaissance tour. Her tour alone was projected to bring in around $4.5 billion for the US economy. And it was reported that, again, these are all stats, so who really knows, but that her concert goers on average spent $300 more per person, like going to the show, than a Swiftie. If that doesn't say it all, I don't know what does, right? So again, it's like, that's impact. Like, who gives a flying fuck that Beyonce never won a random category of an award that, again, we should take with a grain of salt anyway? I even think about like when it pertains to kind of like my sphere of work, right? When it comes to, you know, thought and talk shows and what have you, we just found out the news of Joe Rogan straight hustling Spotify in the deal of the century, in which they renewed him for a $250 million deal. But not only that, it's almost unheard of. It's non-exclusive. So not only is he making more money than God, people are able to find him on Spotify and beyond, Apple, Amazon, what have you. Unheard of. Joe Rogan, arguably, again, regardless, I'm not like the biggest Joe Rogan stan because I have a life to lead and I can't sit around for 3-4 hours listening to a conversation about like beluga whales, but I won't argue or dispute that he's a fucking icon, right? And what he's done is iconic and obviously has massive global impact. I don't see this guy winning any awards, right? Meanwhile, you have people like John Oliver, who I've interviewed, who wins the Emmy for his late night show every single year. I've interviewed him at Emmy's after parties. And to me, it's like big whoop. Like, I personally am not a big John Oliver fan. But again, it's like, how are you going to measure real impact? I also think about all of the iconic staples in our zeitgeist, you know, in pop culture, in media, in art, in history, for that matter, that perhaps never received any accolades, yet everyone who's ever walked this side of the earth knows who they are. I mean, one of my favorite examples is Van Gogh, arguably the famous artist in the world. And when he was alive, no one bought his paintings. The only one who gave a shit about his paintings and bought them was his own brother, Theo, right? Now, like, if you don't know who Van Gogh is, I'm genuinely concerned for your mental well-being. Like, step away from TikTok and, like, let's do this, right? But for that matter, you know, let's look at Oscars, right? Tell me if you don't know any of these iconic movies, right? Again, staples, but maybe they didn't win the accolades. So you have some of the people in this one that I Googled either weren't even nominated, period, or did not win Best Picture, right? So you have Rebel Without a Cause. These are just some. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Clint Eastwood. Which The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is just now like it's a common phrase even in our vernacular, right? It's just like a common like slang. That's how iconic it is. Shawshank Redemption, okay? Like if you don't hear Morgan Freeman, I hope in your dreams every night, who will save your soul, as Joel said, okay? It's a Wonderful Life and Stand By Me. Those are just some. When it comes to the Grammys, you have artists like J-Lo, Katy Perry, Blake Shelton, Demi Lovato, right? Which Demi with the he, she, they, I don't know what category she'd be in this year, but you know, you get the idea. Or songs for that matter that never won Grammys. You have Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, Michael Jackson's Thriller, okay? You have Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA, and the Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand, right? So again, anyone with even like a resemblance of consciousness can sing any of these songs backwards and forwards, yet never won a Grammy. So again, it's like, why are we placing so much emphasis and obsession with the validation? This is what I'm really talking about too with Jay-Z, right? Taking like this big, bold stand, which again, I just thought, number one, on the surface, A, made no sense considering what he was talking about. The fact that he's sitting there with a Global Impact Award and his wife being who she is and breaking records for being the winningest of all time, but also doing it in and of itself. It's like, okay, again, if you are so against these people voting for this and you don't align with them and don't vibe with them, like be about it, right? So an iconic example of this is when Marlon Brando boycotted the Oscars in 1973 when he won for The Godfather. And funny enough, like in this Native American theme, he sent up a Native American, well, this became a whole controversy this year, recently last year, but it's irrelevant because it turned out she wasn't actually Native American, but that doesn't really matter. Because the point was, he sent, for all intents and purposes, a Native American woman up to accept his award and said, I'm accepting this. He didn't want to come. And yes, he's gracious and, you know, thank you for the honor, but frankly, he doesn't want it. And it was all in boycott because of the way that Native Americans, he thought, were treated in American culture and specifically in media and in television and what have you. So he goes and has, you know, what we thought was a Native American woman accept the award on his behalf, right? But like, that's really, in my mind, being about it, period. And, you know, not being hypocritical about it. Lastly, to tie this all in a nice little bow, when it comes to impact and controversy, and again, everything, everyone finding something wrong with everything. The moment that really stood out to me the most rewatching the highlights, let's be real, I'm not dedicating that much of my time to this shit, right? For aforementioned reasons, is the impact of Tracy Chapman, right? So she returns to the Grammy stage for the first time, I don't know, it's like 30 years or something, to do her duet, to do a duet with her iconic song, Fast Car, with Luke Combs, right? And if you recall, I mean, the first of all, I love the song. I love both of their, I love Luke Combs' rendition of it, and of course hers, right? And Tracy Chapman, like, big deal because, you know, Black queer woman, and then you have Luke Combs, who's like a big, burly, like, straight white guy from the South, right? So, like, what would be, you know, in our culture, like, you would think the two would come on stage and, like, the whole stage would implode and, like, fall into the San Andreas, right? If you actually listen to these people. But just a really beautiful moment. And you really, like, it nearly brought me to tears. It was so profound. And you, like, Luke Combs, you see, he doesn't overshadow her or try to upstage her. You see that he's, like, in total awe and admiration of her. And it was just also such a moment because if you remember, there was a controversy when she won the first CMA because Luke Combs, his cover of Fast Car coming out, right, resurfaces the song. It like hits, I think it was like number two on the Billboard Hot 100. And it was a big deal because she then became the first this year Black woman as a songwriter to win for Fast Car for a CMA. And it got so much attention at the time. I talked about it with Carolyn Miller in my show just before the holidays, who's a country singer here in Nashville. And it got so much attention, like Washington Post op-eds and all this and that, about how it's really like, we really shouldn't be celebrating this moment because really it's just a reminder of, you know, how little, you know, women, minority women get opportunities and how it takes like a white man, straight white man, to be the vehicle. And blah, blah, blah. And obviously I didn't see it that way. I've talked about it before. It's like, again, like, let's recognize the greatness of it. And like, we're going to go even further and do even more amazing with all these pessimist Paulas out there. But watching this performance with them, you know, you would never know any of that. It was just such pure joy. And even the song and its legacy, right? And what it captures and why it's so universal of finding love and hope and purpose and self-realization. I have chills right now just thinking about it. And so watching them perform this in unity, you would never know that any of that rattle and talking and uproar ever even happened. You would never, never know that. So, you know, that's what I really want to leave all of you with today. It's like, I get it. We all want to be recognized for hard work, but it's just gone so far when it comes to accolades and what we think we deserve and obsession. It's like, if you really have that legacy and that impact and you're doing what you love and you're affecting people, like, who gives a fuck what a small group of people think? Like, why do you need that to validate you? Because at the end of the day, trophies collect dust, period. But a legacy that lives on forever, baby.